mass hysteria can be a terrifying and bewildering phenomenon, capable of spreading like wildfire through a community. When fear and uncertainty take hold, rationality often gives way to irrational beliefs and behaviors. In the grip of mass hysteria, even the most improbable claims can gain unwavering acceptance, leaving a lasting mark on those affected. Welcome to Paranormal Patio, the podcast that brings you one step closer to the paranormal and occult, one patio at a time. Joining us on this paranormal journey are our intrepid guides, Jason and Keith. Pull up a chair. In this episode, we're delving deep into the haunting stories of two women who found themselves entangled in a web of accusations, witchcraft, and the supernatural. Our first enigmatic figure, Elizabeth Betsy Reed, was a woman whose life was forever altered by the sinister whispers of her neighbors. Accused of being a witch and accused of the unthinkable, poisoning her own husband, her story is a chilling reminder of the hysteria that once gripped communities, turning neighbor against neighbor. Then, prepare to step back in time to the 17th century and into the heart of another dark tale. We'll unravel the eerie story of the Witch of Ridley Creek, Margaret Matson. Accused of bewitching farm animals and uttering strange incantations while cooking meat in a grape cauldron, her presence cast a long shadow of fear over the community. Join us as we venture into the fog-shrouded past, where accusations of witchcraft could mean life or death, and where the line between fact and folklore blurs. These tales are just a glimpse into our haunting history. So, gather round, listeners, and brace yourselves for a journey into the darkest corners of the human psyche. For in the realm of the paranormal, the whispers and the shadows may reveal more than we can ever imagine.
Welcome back to Paranormal Patio. As always, I'm Jason.
And I'm Keith.
This is Keith. If you're not up to speed yet, season 5, we're doing something different. We're changing it up. And if you're watching this on YouTube, thank you so much for trying to grow the YouTube content. If you're just listening to this on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from, except for Apple, it's a personal decision, then great. You can also check out the video version if you want, which I think is cool. We'll do them both. This episode, Keith, this is episode 2 of season 5. This is Hysteria, Accusations.
And Executions.
And Executions,
and
buddy.
This one hits home right
yes,
here.
Yes, absolutely.
This is right here.
This is one that a lot of people have asked me to cover, being as it's a really, really local story.
And it's been covered. There's a couple of documentaries that people have made on it. It was the town story for years. Oh, yeah. The horror story went out to the place. I've been going out there since I was a teenager. The party place. Go out in the woods, scare girls and stuff. You know how it is.
So, yeah. Again, the idea of this season is to have one story that's kind of local to us in our area within driving distance. And another story that I have never heard of, which is the idea or the goal. Or something I didn't know a whole lot about, digging into that. And it can be from anywhere in the world. And as you, obviously, the last episode, we talked about Rasputin. So this will be kind of in the same vein of the Rasputin thing.
A little bit more witchcraft.
Yeah, definitely. But
accusations of witchcraft.
Accusations.
That was big at that point in time.
Yeah. So Keith's going to be talking about Betsy Reed.
Yep.
The hanging of Elizabeth Betsy Reed.
Yes, the last woman hung in the state of Illinois.
Wasn't she the only one?
Maybe even the only one, yes. But they sold tickets to this.
No, it was wild.
Yeah, it was a big ordeal.
It's messed up. Anyway, yeah, so let's kick things off, man. I want to hear the story that I already know.
In 1845, Betsy Reed was accused of giving her husband, Leonard, a cup of arsenic-laced sassafras tea. He died the next day. The charge is based only on one point, coming from a relative. Someone seen it or someone didn't like her.
Yep.
Tried to blame his death on that.
Yep.
Betsy was not well liked in the tiny village of Heathsville, Illinois. Many of the women found her to be cold-hearted, uncaring, and eccentric. However, the men appeared to be fascinated by her, observing none of the traits the local woman did. Good-looking girl, the other ladies hated it.
Yep. That's pretty cut and dry, I think.
Yeah.
Jealousy.
Yep, jealousy. And in the court of public opinion, Leonard didn't fare much better.
Poor Leonard.
Some viewed him as a calculated businessman, others as a failure who was unwilling to fit into society. Either way, neither garnered public sympathy or support. Reed was arrested, taken to Palestine, Illinois, and charged with murdering her husband. She was placed in the Palestine jail where she started a fire that burned down the building. Officials said that she had nothing in her possession that could have been used to start a fire.
Yeah.
But there had been oil lamps or stuff inside the jail in 1845, I would imagine.
You would think. But the jail was just a pit.
Yeah, it was just a pit. Yeah.
With like essentially like railroad tie like walls.
Yeah, it was,
right?
Yeah, it was like a wooden jail. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was in the ground. You had to go dig down a ladder or whatever to get in
there. Yeah, yeah, like a pit had her down in there.
Yeah.
She was running down Main Street, allegedly with her clothes on fire, by a man sitting outside of the local hotel. People in the area believe that some people must have the power to create fire out of thin air. With no physical means of doing so, those people must be witches.
Must be witches.
This is in situation... In situation of her being a witch, she had been made in the town. 1,300 residents believe the story. Maybe a little typo there.
Well, hey, who wrote this stuff? Yeah. Can we get a new copy for Keith?
I got confused there for a second. Like, this guy knows how to read.
I wasn't sure if it was you or me.
Yeah. It was one of us.
I wrote this.
I think it should have been insinuated, but...
Who knows what I put in there?
Reed was moved to the Lawrence County Jail in Lawrenceville, Illinois, about 25 miles away. The change of venue did nothing to assist in Reed's defense. The story was so horrifying for the time that it was being covered by newspapers from around the state, around the country, and as far away as New York City.
Ah.
So another one of them going to the city, the rural stories get out to the city, and everybody's scared of the witches again. Yeah.
But just to make it clear, she's going to trial not for being a witch.
No, for murder.
For murder.
For murdering her husband.
Just to clarify.
Elizabeth Reed was defended by two well-known attorneys, Augustus French and Usher Linder. The only witness to alleged murder was a relative, 16-year-old Evelyn Deal. Evelyn said that she was saw Betsy pour a white powder into Leonard's tea and serve it to him. No other evidence was given. Reed's trial lasted for 3 days, and she was never allowed to commit in her own defense. Illinois Supreme Court Justice William Wilson pronounced her guilty of murder and sentenced to be hanged. Could have been sugar?
Well, I don't know if I included it. If not, I'll go back when we're done.
Okay. Although it wasn't brought up at trial, no one would dare to test her being a murderer. Leonard had been sick for about 3 days before his death. Been sick. Had pneumonia, the flu.
Let's read on and find out.
He'd been taking antimony, and it both looks similar to arsenic powder, and an overdose of antimony presents similar symptoms to arsenic poisoning. Since she was not allowed to testify that her husband had been ill, and because of the poor standing in the community, no one would defend her. This was not discussed in her defense.
How about that?
So, even poisoning from overdose of medicine.
Accidental. Or maybe it wasn't.
Maybe it wasn't. We didn't have a great standing.
No.
On the morning of May 23rd, 1845, thousands lined the streets in the small town of Lawrenceville. Crowds estimated from range from 8,000 to 20,000 people on hand for the execution.
That's more than live there today.
Yes. Yep. Crowd estimates range, or it was rumored that Betsy Reed found God in the 11th hour.
And of course.
Had been baptized in the Embral River the night before.
Thank God. Thank you, Jesus.
And that's right down there by where the school was built, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Report said that she went to the gallows riding on the top of her coffin, singing hymns and chanting religious verses in a white dress. The minister who presided, Reverend John Seed, preached a long sermon to the crowd while Betsy continued to sing and chant. 90 minutes later, Elizabeth Betsy Reed became the first woman in the U.S. ever publicly executed and the only executed by hanging in the state of Illinois.
So, if it's really true that she rode out on her coffin singing hymns and all this stuff. Like, a part of me wonders and will always wonder if, let's just say that did happen, right? Like, do you think maybe she was just doing that to, like, call out all these people that are supposed to be all godly and all this stuff, but have all gathered to watch her die.
Yep. Paying for tickets, nonetheless.
Yes. And
the flyers, I mean, I've seen one of the old flyers from it.
And it's crazy. Like, I think, yeah, I think that if she really did do that, it's one of two things. She really did do that, and it was because she was, like, you know, like, jabbing back at these people. Or that didn't happen, and that's the, you know, ultra-religious people that were here and still are here saying, well, at least she found Jesus before she was killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that could not have even happened at all. It could just
be part of the story added to it.
Who knows? Sorry, impossible to tell today. Yep. No one that's alive today was there.
Nope. So. According to the New York Daily Tribune, Betsy's body was taken down and autopsied. It was found that she had swallowed tiny pieces of brick and pulverized glass in an attempt to kill herself and escape the hangman's noose. No one cheats the hangman in my town.
Nope.
Betsy Reed was buried outside of the local town cemetery in an unmarked grave, but family members who did not believe she was guilty demanded she gave a proper burial. Betsy was reinterred at a tiny country cemetery called Baker outside of Heathsville, so the same town she was from originally, where it took place. Elizabeth buried next to Leonard, the husband she found guilty of killing. At the back of the cemetery, a simple stone marked ER can be found in the grass. Alongside it is a replacement stone that simply lists their names, dates, and how they died.
I love this part.
Under Leonard's name, it says death by murder. Under Betsy's, it says Reed's death by hanging. When the tale of Betsy Reed resurfaced and becomes a focus on the local pop culture again for a few moments, late 90s, early 2000s.
It does it again, though, over and over and over again. I've seen it pop back up multiple times just in the last 15 years.
Yep. People always report encounters with her ghost strolling the cemetery where she was buried in a white dress. These reports might be real, but they might also be a continuation of the same false accusations that were ultimately responsible for ending of her life. Yeah, I've been out to the house. It's scary, but I've never been to the cemetery seeing the ghost. Like, it to get out to the house, it's kind of a walk. You got to go through, if you're, because the road that used to be out there, you can't get out there through the road no more.
Sure.
So you have to go through a field, over a creek, and up a hill that the house and the barn set right on the edge of. And, I mean, the house is, it's torn to pieces.
I'm sure. I was just going to ask you, like, when was the last time you saw it?
2003.
Okay, so it may not even be still standing at all.
The barn, it was what, the huge barn that was out, it was way creepier because, you know, the windows, it had no windows in it like the house did, and they were all busted out anyway. So that light got in, but the barn, man, if you'd go inside that, it was creepy. That was the creepy part.
Yes. I've never been.
Yeah. One of these times, man, we got ran off a couple times out
there. I'm sure.
Like, one time we got back and the cops were up there sitting by the vehicles and stuff. And we're like, God, should we stay down here and hide and wait for him to leave? No, we just got ran off. This is also a major conflict of belief as to whether or not she's actually buried in Baker Cemetery.
True.
Some say she's actually buried where she fell from the gallows, which at the time went on to become the Lawrenceville Illinois High School football fields right down there on the Embraer River across the bridge. The school is no longer in use. No. And then I think it caught fire not too long ago and they tore it down. Some say she was absolutely buried in Baker Cemetery by her family after the autopsy. Elizabeth Betsy Reed was the first and last woman executed in Illinois. This is true. That's the hanging is true. But few know that the first person executed, at least legally, in Illinois was a black man in Cahokia for witchcraft.
How about that? Interesting twist.
He was supposed to be burned at the stake, but someone got ahead of the game with their pistol, perhaps out of mercy or perhaps out of fear. They say the spirits roam Cahokia, too.
Yeah, it's a big hotspot. We still need to go there.
We do need to go there. We need to go to Young Tobacco's grave, which he was the long knife with George Roger Clark. He was a Piankashaw chief from Vincennes, and he wanted to be a long knife, joined George Rogers Clark. And then after his death, whatnot, George Rogers Clark wrote in his book, no, he is a long knife, because that's all he wanted to be. He was on that side. He kind of joined the Americans, whereas the other chiefs at the time were telling him, hey, watch out for the Americans. And He was young. I guess that's why they called him Young Tobacco, huh? But he's buried there. I'd like to find out where.
Sure. I just have never been, and I really want to go.
I've been one time. We went on a school field trip in high school. We stopped there for a second, and then we went to the museum, went to the zoo, did that stuff.
The typical stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, really, high school kids in general probably aren't going to be real interested in Cahokia. No, but
climbing up Cahokia. Yeah.
Massive mountains, man. Like, I've seen lots of pictures and videos and stuff. I just haven't been. I've been past them, damn, 300 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the exit to Cahokia is right outside of St. Louis. I mean, yep. It's
on the south end, down by Belleville. And
yeah, yep. And there's that big Christian college there in Belleville, right?
Yes.
I don't remember which one it's called.
I can't remember either.
Anyway, I want to give everybody the phone number for our hotline, Keith. Did you know we had a hotline?
No. Tell us what the number is.
So if you want to submit a story, leave feedback, just say hi, whatever. You can even text us, Keith. Technology.
Yep.
Text us, call us, leave us a voicemail. No one's going to answer the phone. This isn't a personal number. Just leave a voicemail, leave a text. You can be anonymous or not. I don't care. We don't care. No judgment, right? 765-665-6488. Once again, 765-665-6488. It should be coming across the screen probably down here after I do the magic of editing. Like, you know, maybe like down here or so, maybe.
As we're speaking earlier, too, hopefully we get some people from the area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we say the Wabash Valley. And
yeah, absolutely. The Wabash Valley. If you know where the Wabash Valley is, you're probably from there. So, yeah, reach out to us, especially if you have clarification on some of these stories.
Yep.
As we get deeper into the season, we're talking about more local things.
Or something we said was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Correct us, please.
Well, we'll eat our hat, man. We don't care. Yeah. And so, not all that being said, let's take a break for our special guest interview. Unless we don't have one. All right. Special guest interview time, everybody. Drum roll. Okay. I am now interviewing the wonderful Wild Creek Witch, Logan Canifax herself. Welcome to Paranormal Patio. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule. I know you're getting over the crud, like I think nearly everyone I know right now. Keith, the co-host, is out right now with it and has hindered our recording capabilities, at least for a little while. Hopefully he'll be back in it. He still has the same thing, I think, that you're dealing with, the bronchitis follow-up to having something really nasty. We don't say the C word.
Yes.
You know, we don't like to say the C word.
No.
You know,
C word is bad. Bad word now.
It's a bad word. We're just going to pretend it doesn't exist. I think that's the way to go. But anyway, I wanted to have you on the show to talk about some witchcraft stuff, because this episode, you're smack dab in the middle of two witch tales. Okay. We just talked about, Keith and I just talked about the sort of maybe possibly witch story out of our local area. It's the tale of Elizabeth Betsy Reed. And although she wasn't tried for being a witch, was sort of the, I think, a big motivator that came to her being the only and, you know, technically still last woman in the state of Illinois to be hung. And there's a lot of accusations flying around before that day came to pass. And I just don't know. I'm on the fence. I don't know that she was a witch. And then the other story that's coming up after our little chat here will be the Witch of Ridley Creek, which is a woman who was actually put on trial for being a witch with a wonderful ending, I think, to that story. But as the Wild Creek Witch herself. Logan, can you tell me a little bit about yourself for people who may not know who you are?
Yeah, so I am a practicing folk witch. I grew up really religious. I grew up in a very religious home. We were Methodist. And so I consider myself, you know, like deconstructed, I guess, Methodist. But a lot of my practice is very private. Like, I don't post a lot of it on social media or anything like that. The, like, you know, rituals that I do and stuff like that. But there are some things that I share, you know, like I run a online shop where I sell teas and tinctures and bundles and stuff that are heavily rooted in folk magic. And when I say folk magic, I mean like my magic. So I grew up in the South. I'm from Texas. My family came down from the Appalachians. So I have I have a lot of influence from that. And it's, you know, my family wasn't witchy by any means. They were very devout Christians, very devout Catholics, whichever they so chose. But they also married and integrated with Native Americans too. So they really were influenced by some of their more folky, you know, vibes. And they, like, my grandmother to this day still carries crystals in her pocket, but she doesn't consider it witchy, you know, like,
considers it really interesting
stones. Like, yeah.
Yeah. There's that subset of people who follow a magical path under the context that it's not magic at all.
100%. And she, she reads her Bible every day and she carries her healing stones and she'll even like pray with her stones. Like, she's very non-witchy, you know, like she's.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I, you know, growing up with that, I kind of was always into like weird stuff, you know, like I was the black sheep of the family. I still am. I'm very non-conformist. I don't like conforming to anything really. It's like, it's just like a personal vendetta that I have against the world.
Yeah, good for you. But, I'm with you.
Nonconformity. So, like, when I was growing up, I never felt right. You know, I never felt like I was in the right place with spirituality and God and all of that. So, when I got into college, I started, you know, hanging out with new people. I was an art major. I started hanging out with all the artsy kids and they were into the new age tarot and all the cool, you know, like cryptids and Bigfoot. And like, we were all weird and it was nice. Like, I felt like I had found my people. And then my friend introduced me to like tarot and stuff. And I started getting into that and started getting okay with it. And then it just like, I just went down a whole path and I started, you know, getting into witchcraft and not really like, I'm not a Wicca. That never felt right to me. Like, I'm not a coven girl. I'm a solitary practitioner. So like, as I've evolved over time now, I've just got into, I still use some parts of, and I know this is probably taboo for a lot of witches out there. Sorry, witch talk, but I am very, my practice is my practice and I use a lot of Native American things. I use a lot of Irish Celtic things because that's where I have a lot of ancestry from. I even have Slavic ancestry. So like, I use the things that my family taught each other without having to put it into a box. So it's just, you know, it's mine. I don't do rituals every day. I don't have time for all that. I have a kid, so I ain't got time for all that, but I'll light a candle or while I'm sitting in my office, I'll make a simmer pot on my desk, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that is my witchcraft. And so like, if you get on my website and stuff, you'll see that I have like a green witch bundle and a Southern folk witch bundle and stuff like that. But that's like, those are rituals that I do, but not necessarily all the time, you know? So,
yeah. And when you do them, you only do them to conjure Satan to kill Christians, right?
100%. I am out here.
I knew it.
To possess you with the devil. 100%.
That's, you know, we've evolved a lot in society. It's 2023. And a lot of things have become much more acceptable than they were even 20 years ago. You know, I remember 20 years ago being in high school, showing my age, being into this type of stuff. Yeah, I did catch a little flack for it. And it did cause me to sort of suck it back in, so to speak, you know, for a long time. And yeah, you're happier when you are yourself. I think I've found, you know, just embracing the weird has been a blessing for me. And that does include magical pathways as well. I mean, if it's something that draws you to it, go for it. That's my message for everyone. If you feel like you're being drawn to something, just lean into it because that's what you're meant to be doing. And it, you know, maybe you're not into it and that's okay too. But let other people find their thing, whether it's something like this or they collect Hot Wheels cars, or maybe they're really weird like me and they collect only bootleg Godzilla action figures from the 80s. You know, just let them have it because it doesn't hurt you. And nope. I don't collect Godzilla toys to, you know, to hurt anyone. It's just for me. I enjoy it. You know, so same thing with witchcraft. If you know someone who says that they practice witchcraft of any type or any other magical order, they're not out to kill you. They're not summoning Satan unless they're satanic, and they probably still wouldn't be summoning Satan. As Christians don't summon Jesus. It's the same sort of thing. But this has largely almost every magical branch in life has no connection to Satan. No. So don't be afraid. We're just people just like you. Okay. So you mentioned that your family came from Appalachia. Have you any time in your life went back to Appalachia to visit the stomping grounds?
So no. And it is on my list. So we're taking a trip. We're planning to take a trip next year. And I told my partner that is where I want to go. I want to go see Appalachia. I want to go to Kentucky. I want all of it, like all the things. I want to go up to Pennsylvania as well. Cause that's where, when my family came across, came through Ellis Island, and then they came through to and settled in Pennsylvania and kind of did the Quaker thing. They were like Quakers basically. So, I'd like to go up there as well and visit the Pennsylvania area and then kind of like come down. Cause, it is like calling my heart. Like,
yes,
it is like calling my heart. I did take a trip to Dakota, which is a little off the path, but that vibe, that like the mountains, the trees, the everything, like I need it in my heart.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people feel that pull to go to the beach. I'm like, you can have the beach. Nah, just send me to Kentucky.
Yes.
You know, you get one little taste of it and it's in you forever.
I can't wait. I just cannot wait.
So you're going to be, you know, you're planning on going to Appalachia, the whole region. You know, you're going to be coming from the West. I recommend stopping by Somerset in Kentucky on your way.
That's
in the fringes. Mm-hmm. You have to go there. And when you do, hopefully Kyle Cadell's museum will still be operating and you can go visit the museum in Somerset downtown. Yes. Highly recommended. And say hi to the fine folks in Somerset while you're there. And it's a good time.
Yes.
Maybe you'll even run into the mysterious Nathan Isaac wandering the streets.
Fangirling right now, Nathan.
Nathan is so great. Kyle's great. There's so many great people in Somerset. Nathan and Darian and Kyle from Penny Royal, obviously some really great friends and great people. Josh Van Hook is down there finding weird caves and making models out of junk. His YouTube channel is terrific. You've got Dan Dutton there. I had the privilege of camping in Dan Dutton's back 40 under a full moon one night, because there was we had a gathering there, and there was an announcement like, if you want to camp out there, bring your tent, you know, $5, you can camp out there and we'll have food and everything. It's like, all right, I'm going to do that.
That sounds awesome.
And it was under the impression there would be multiple people camping, and no one else camped. There were like three or four people that stayed in Dan's guest house. And then I was out there in a tent all by myself. You know, it was terrific though. It was terrific. And really, I don't think I went to sleep until like 3 a.m. So I was good.
That's awesome.
I'd love to do that again too. I think maybe the next time I'm down in Somerset, I might pitch tent in Dan Dutton's field just for kicks, just for the nostalgia. Dan's place, I mean, he doesn't necessarily like welcome strangers to his property, I don't think, but it's a magical place to be. And if you ever are presented with the opportunity, I highly recommend taking it just to go visit Dan. And man, we had a great time. At the end of the night, when it started getting dark, we built a big fire. Dan was playing music on his guitar. We're just hanging out. And then he took us out into the woods in the middle of the night while playing his guitar and singing Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads.
That's awesome.
Like the Pied Piper of Somerset. Took us out into the woods, no flashlights, no anything, to show us this art installation that he had done where a giant tree had been uprooted. And he made what he calls the Earth Mother sculpture in the root system of this tree that's laid down. And we got lost out there and came back, and it was just a terrific time. So definitely keep an eye on Dan Dutton's Facebook for any events that he might be having, and maybe you'll get lucky.
I definitely will.
It's terrific. Okay, let's talk about witchcraft though again. So folk magic is alive and well, especially in Appalachia. And I've talked to multiple people about this over the years, and I find it utterly fascinating, like I had mentioned earlier, how people will deny the existence of magic, mm-hmm. but will have tinctures sitting up in their kitchen on the cabinets and have crystals in their bras and mm-hmm. and the whole gamut of things, but it's not magic. They are devout Christians. They are devout Methodists. They are devout Presbyterians, whatever it is. Like, they have their like quote unquote normal people spirituality. And then they do all these other things that have been passed down from generation to generation that they know for a fact, just these things work. If you mm-hmm. need to do this, well, this is what you do. And if you have this going on, this is what you need to do, but it's not magic. You're not a witch. And I've always found that totally fascinating.
Oh yeah. And witchcraft is like, that is not a word you use. Like if you use witchcraft, you are the devil. You are a consort mm-hmm. of the devil. You are a promiscuous sexual being that needs to be eradicated. And so it's never been something that they considered witchcraft. And so, like, I feel like, you know, witchcraft being a relatively new term to the world, okay? Like, it wasn't thought of that way for centuries. Like, women in general, like, they were the priests and the diviners and the healers of the communities and the tribes and the everything. And it just turned, you know, because of the rise, totally blaming it on the Christians, but I kind of am a little bit.
I am.
With the rise of Christianity, you see all of that just like go away so fast.
Yeah.
Because God is a man. God has to be a man. God has to be the devout. You have to be devout. You have to be only worshiping that God. And so you see women going from being these, you know, leaders in the pillars of the community to, oh, we have to burn them at the stake because they're invoking the devil, which is so bizarre to me. It's just a way for them to, in my opinion, it's a way for men to, you know, take care of the women and make sure that they are conforming to what they want them to conform to. It's a way to make them small as a way to get rid of anything associated with a goddess or the earth, really, in my opinion. You know, like women were associated, are associated with the earth because we can give life. We can, you know, do what we need to do to take care of a whole child. And they don't like you being venerated. They don't like you being, you know, worshipped in any way or thought of as a higher person in the community, which is.
Yeah.
Here we are. And we're still dealing with it today.
Yeah, we are. To a lesser degree, but in a different way as well.
Yes.
You know, I totally support women in everything that they want to do. You know, that's great. If it, even if it's doing nothing, you know, good for you. But I don't get political here.
No,
I'm going to get political for just a second, just a second to say, although I disagreed, with practically everything that Hillary Clinton did leading up to the presidential election where she was running for president of the United States. And I would not have voted for her and didn't vote for her. I will go down probably in flames being beaten, knowing the community that I live in, by saying that not electing Hillary Clinton in that election was the greatest mistake this country has ever made. And if I could go back, I probably would have thrown my one measly vote at her just to prevent the fallout of what happened next.
Yes, agreed.
And, you know, and it's not just because I think Donald Trump's an egotistical maniac who has absolutely no respect for any level of office, because I don't. But I also think the real problem came in the appointing of Supreme Court justices under his presidency that will set us back 100 years. And that's where the biggest mistake came. That's what the real impact is going to be felt for decades because of the decisions made by the people put in place under former President Donald Trump.
And one of them is a woman.
Yeah. How's that make you feel?
Oh, dude. I was like, you know that show Handmaid's Tale?
I'm aware of it. I haven't watched
that. I've never watched the whole thing because I like can't. Like, it makes me so angry to watch that show. So I just don't watch it. Yeah. But I watched like the first episode, and like one of the women, you know, they're all in their little, in the area or whatever, and there's a woman running them. And I immediately thought of that woman. I was like, you just set women back 100 years because of your Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
Which
it's not fair.
It's, you know, I'm very passionate. I'm not super, I don't like to talk about politics either, but I am super passionate about women's rights. And living in Texas, all of the things that are going on with, there's a new story out about a woman who appealed to the governor and he turned her down because she got a fetal, like a, you know, a bad diagnosis that she would die and possibly the baby would die, and they're making her carry the child. And I just, I can't, I just, it breaks my heart. It's, like, honestly, it makes me so sad.
It's absolutely awful.
And we've been dealing with it for a long time.
Yeah. And we're going to be for a while, unfortunately. I address this because there's this sort of misinterpretation of witchcraft and that it's only women. And I'm not doing this to inject masculinity into the situation, but there are tons of men who identify as being, you know, following witchcraft. Maybe not somebody, they might not use the terminology that they are a witch, but they are. So how does that make you feel as a woman and clearly a feminist that there are men that also do the same thing? Does that have any effect on your opinion?
Not at all. I think it's great. Honestly, I think that, okay, so I'm very, yes, I'm a feminist, but I'm not so extreme that I hate men, obviously. Like,
right,
not like that at all. But I think that wanting to be in witchcraft is awesome. Like, I think it's great. As long as, you know, and most of the men that I know that do witchcraft aren't using it to, you know, make things happen for them or make, you know what I mean? Like, they're not like, oh, I'm going to be a man and I'm going to manifest all this stuff for myself and for my, you know, my gender or whatever. It's not like that. Yeah, as long as it's not like that, like, dude, more power to you. I think that's awesome. I think it's, I think that witchcraft and magic and spirituality are for everyone. And I think it's a really, I met a guy at the bookstore the other day, him and his wife. And they were both like former Catholics and they were looking for books about witchcraft and, you know, connecting with the earth and stuff like that. And I sat there and had a 30-minute conversation with them about how I do things and books that I've read and stuff like that. And I was just like in awe. He was like, you know, like a Texan looking dude. Okay. Like ball cap, big beard, beer belly, like big, awesome Texas dude. And he's like, yeah, me and my wife, we just really want to get back to, you know, worshiping the planet and stuff. Cause that's what they did for a long time. And I didn't see a problem with it. And I was like, this man, you know, like,
yeah,
I just couldn't, you know, but then it got me thinking like, for everybody, like one who wants to practice magic should, like, you should never, it's never a woman thing, it's never a man thing, it's a community, you know, you build a community with like minds, and that's what's important to me. Like,
yeah,
my partner is not super into witchcraft or anything like that, but like he will participate in some things if I want him to, or he's okay with, you know, he's okay with me like teaching my child things once he's old enough, and he's only two. So, but teaching him like little things and stuff like that. And it's great. He is so accepting of it because like I've been judged for it for a lot. You know, people think I'm crazy or people think that I put too much effort into esoteric stuff and occult stuff. And I'm like, that's my thing. And I love it. It's who I am. It's what I do. It's a way of life for me. And I want to share that with people. Like I have plenty of guys that follow me on Instagram that are with it, you know, into witchcraft and stuff like that. And it's great. I love to see it. It's awesome. I think that the more we can spread that around, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm with you 100%. Another thing I want to get back on was you mentioned you even wanted to go up to Pennsylvania on your Appalachia trip. You know, the Witch of Ridley Creek story comes out of Pennsylvania back a long, long time ago, even predating the Salem witch trial. So, you know, stick around for that and catch that story if you haven't already researched it. Because, you know, you may have a certain tie to that. I mean, if you have people from Pennsylvania in your lineage, you know, you might find some surprises there, in that story. I thought it was a great story I'd never heard of before.
Yeah. It was really interesting to read about that. I look forward to what you talk about with that.
Another thing in Pennsylvania is the Chestnut Ridge, and that's kind of this high strangeness capital of Pennsylvania. So look into that for your trip too.
For sure.
For sure. Okay. So witchcraft to you is what? I'm going to throw you under the spotlight here. Like someone says witchcraft, what is it that witchcraft is to you?
So witchcraft to me is a way to break free of rules, conformity. It's also a way to connect to the earth for me. I am big into plants. I am very much a gardener. I enjoy being outside, and I enjoy the way that the world feels around me. It feels like your home. You know what I mean? And So witchcraft for me is all about breaking free, like being able to be myself, being able to find my place in the world, and respecting the planet and the people that are on it, I guess.
Yeah, I dig it.
Yeah.
So with the story that came just before this interview on the episode, The Hanging of Elizabeth Reed, the accusations of her being a witch come about when her husband dies. Mm-hmm. And not an uncommon thing to have happened. Kind of uncommon here where mm-hmm. I live, but in the world, you know, not so uncommon. What would you think it would be like if, and this is just a terrible thought, but your partner were to pass away randomly, and people know that you have a reputation for being a witch? What kind of fallout do you think you would have in that? Do you think that we've come farther now that you wouldn't be accused of his undoing because of your background?
Okay. So I think we've come farther than that. As a whole, as a society. Now, I live in Lubbock. Lubbock is probably one of the most conservative towns in Texas, if not the, I would say. So I cannot. Do I think it would happen? Absolutely not. Do I think that they would judge me as a witch? 100%. But do I think they would blame me and my witchcraft for his demise? No, I don't think that that would be a thing, but they would definitely put that in the article in the newspaper. Let's just say that. Oh yeah. 100%. I truly believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel
bad. She practices witchcraft. Like, I think that would happen, but I don't think they would, you know, go down the rabbit hole of, oh, she did, you know, she poisoned him or something with some diluted psychedelic drug or something. Like, I don't think it would be like that, but they would definitely say, oh yeah, she's into witchcraft. Like,
yeah, I do. I think often about, you know, my inevitable demise and the subsequent clearing out of my studio and some of the things that are out here, what kind of stories will be told about me and what kind of accusations will be made about me and what sort of hysteria will result in my passing, you know, as a weirdo. I think about that a lot, but I don't often ask other people what they think about it. I'm glad I got to ask you.
Oh yeah, definitely. If they came in my house, in my office, they'd be like, this girl worshiping the devil. She got the devil in her.
Yeah. I don't know why they thought that. It must have been the giant 7-foot Baphomet statue I have back here. No. But no, it's an interesting take because I do think it would be in the coffee shop conversation, so to speak, for sure. You know that they were into magic, right? You know that.
Oh yeah.
She did witchcraft. You know he was a warlock. You know, like, oh, all yeah, that stuff.
100%. And they would immediately associate him with that too, because he allows me to do it. You know what I mean? Like, he allows me to do it. Like, they would 100%. Oh yeah, they were magicians and they worshiped the devil and their kids probably possessed by a demon. Like, oh yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Good old Southern girls would be talking about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that it would maybe make the paper here, but it would definitely get more rounds in the community than the newspaper does, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so as a magical practitioner, I assume that you know more than a dozen other magical practitioners that you've communicated with in your lifetime, probably over 100. How many of them have you known that they have ever done something I don't want to say evil, but something unfavorable with their magical practice?
So there's plenty. I mean, so hexing to me, I only do it in very, very extreme circumstances. And they do too. They don't take hexing. Like there's whole Instagrams that are just dedicated to hexes that are just, that's all they do. And I just feel like that's so, I'm not trying to be all love and light here, but like so negative. Like, why do you want to hex people all the time? You know what I mean? Like, I get it. There's a time, there's a place for it, for sure. But to do that, like to dedicate just your practice to that, like seems so, and a lot of the people that I know, same way, you know, they're very like, yeah, I'll hex someone if it's like, or return to sender or whatever, if it's like extreme, you know, like if it's somebody who's like magically attacking you or, you know, slandering you on social media, whatever. Like if it's something like that, okay. But I mean, I haven't done a hex in years. I haven't had to. I mean, I try to keep myself to myself, you know, and I just don't to do that in a long time, but it has happened, you know, and it does happen, and it's okay. Like, it's not anything bad. It's not something that I think I look down on people for in any way, but it just, you know, if that's like all you do, I just feel like that's really like negative, you know, like, and there's a place for that. If that's what you want to do, go for it. All right. Like, I am negative Nancy myself. But I just don't wish ill on people. I don't know. I just don't, I don't know a lot of people that are like purposely like, I'm wishing ill on you. And if you are, that's like, what did they do to you? Like, they better done something wrong, you know, like called your child, snot picker, or, you know, like that kind of stuff is just silly. You know, like,
okay, so I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions that are gonna seem out of place, but how many times have you been in a car accident? Okay, how many times have you been in a car?
God, a million. I don't know.
Okay, so would you equate that ratio of accidents to traveling to about the same of negative uses of witchcraft to the normal amount, like the normal regular witchcraft that goes on?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you are living your life terrified of witches, just know you are as likely to get into a car accident as you are to encounter a magical practitioner that practices in a way that is possibly detrimental to you.
Yeah, it's true.
Same ratio.
It's true.
So relax.
Nobody's out to harm people. You.
Just be good to people and they won't have a reason to do anything.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, I feel like now with witch talk and TikTok and all this crap, like, just take it so seriously. Like, oh my God, I saw a TikTok the other day. Oh my God, somebody left a jar in my car. And I was like, did you maybe just forget that was there? Like, seems silly to me that somebody broke into your car that was locked and I watched you hit the button and put that in your car.
Yeah.
I just don't. Yeah. It's so silly to me. Like, no, we do not want to hurt you unless you come at me first. I was raised with the mentality, you never start a fight, you always finish it.
Mm-hmm.
That is my true belief with witchcraft. I am not going to start anything with you. As long as you don't start it with me, you start it with me, we're going to have problems. But other than that, we cool. Like,
definitely.
I don't care about you and your life, period. Like, I just don't. I have too much to do. Okay.
too busy summoning Satan over here to worry about you parking.
I'm too busy summoning Satan to be worrying about you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. do you know very many Satanists at all?
No, actually, I don't know one. Like, I know. Okay. So I know some people that like, they don't worship Satan in this. And I'm using quotes here, 'cause that's like what Christians say. I'm saying they like, is he a deity that they work with? Absolutely. Is he a deity or a, you know, a, I personally don't really do the whole deity thing. I think that they are a spirit 100%, and I will petition certain spirits. Okay. When necessary. And the idea of Satan, okay, the trickster, the God who is kind of, you know, more darker and things like that. If I'm using a hex on someone and it's like serious, and I mean like serious, serious, okay, like you had to have done something really wrong for me to petition Satan, okay? Like I will petition that energy. Not necessarily the devil. I want the devil coming. I don't need no devil in my house. So I will petition and say, hey, can you put some of your energy in this hex for me? That kind of thing. Does that make sense? Like,
yep.
It's not by any means me worshiping the devil or anything like that. Mm. I know plenty of people that petition Satan or the idea of Satan, you know, I'm more into the pan aspect of it, I guess, you know, I really associate that same energy with the Satan figure of Christianity. I just don't, I don't like him being called Satan. it just has so many Christian negative connotations and I don't like it.
Yeah, you're right. And that leads me to sort of the next, question that I want to ask, because I do not acknowledge the existence of any particular God as the creator of all. I have a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. And I also, on the same hand, other side, I definitely think that there has been so much energy put into the idea of virtually any God that any religion has cooked up, that energy has definitely created an egregore in our reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can work with the ideas, like you mentioned, of these deities, these even demons and angels, and see the results that you're looking for while also denying that they exist in religious terms.
Yes.
For like, so I don't believe in angels, but I believe that if I needed to do a specific thing, it might require me to communicate with the egregore of, I don't know, Archangel Michael, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hard border for a lot of people to cross who might find themselves anti-religious but curious about magic, and then the first thing they find on Google is Thelema, for example, and it's all about angels and demons and working your way to contacting your holy guardian angel, and the terminology is off-putting to people who are anti-religion, especially people who came from a Christian background who have had issues with it. And I think looking at these beings as egregorical versus biblically canonical is a way to approach it, because you don't have to believe in it if enough other people believe in it.
Exactly.
Real.
The energy's already there. Like,
yeah,
you don't. And that's my, I'm very similar in that. I don't think that you have to believe in any God if you don't want to at all. I don't think that you have to say, oh, I worship God, or I worship Madonna or Isis or anything. You don't have to worship any of them because that energy is already there. People do worship them. There are people that are very into those things, and that's great. And more power to you. I think that's awesome. I just don't. I think that more of a, it's a spirit, you know, like a, like an egregore, but I call egregore spirits. I think that they're just there. Their energy is there because there are enough people that believe in them.
Do you think that they exist solely because people believe in them, or do you think that they existed and then people worshiped them? Which hand do you fall on?
I kind of fall in the middle. A part of me believes that they could have possibly been a god. But I also fall in the side where were they really gods, or were they just beings that people created, you know, like over time, like in their minds, I guess, or whatever. And they just worshiped them because they didn't have anything else to do, you know, like think about it, you know, back then there wasn't a whole lot to do. So they focused on the world around them. Okay. And I think that it was more of a, you know, like the Mesoamericans had rain gods and sun gods, and all of these different cultures have the same gods. They just call them different things. Like it's all the same, but they all have different names, or they're associated with the one different thing than this one. And I just think that it was a way for them to understand around them. So if you hear thunder in the night sky, when I was growing up, it was Jesus and the angels playing bowling. Okay.
Yep.
So
that's what I was getting ready to say.
Exactly. Yes. Like it was your ancestors bowling with Jesus, you know, like, so then, you know, like way back in the day, people are like, oh my gosh, there's gotta be beings up there or giants or whatever that are throwing rocks around or whatever, you know, playing a ball game or whatever they chose. And I think that well, let's give that dude a name, you know, let's call him Ra. He's the dude that rules the sky, you know, like let's just give it a name, and then we can make sure that we appease them and keep them happy so that we can have positive influences over our life. I guess that's where I'm at with it. I'm kind of torn. I want to believe they're real, you know, like a part of me wants to be like, yeah, there's like giants in the sky bowling and like getting mad at each other. But then, you know, my logical side is like, girl, come on. You're getting a little crazy there. This ain't Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I definitely follow where you're going with that. It's funny, and this is a thought I'd never had until you were talking just now, that because we are where we are because of coincidences that happened hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, there's some tribe that's trying to appease the rock throwing thunder god, and by a sheer coincidence and good luck, they do something and they think that has appeased them, and then that becomes a generational ritual that gets passed on and on and on. But it's just a stroke of luck, but because they have put that energy into it, like there's a reality blend there.
Yeah.
And how many things happen now because of coincidences and good luck hundreds of years ago? I've never thought about that before.
It's that synchronicity thing. Everybody just decided, oh man, synchronicity. Synchronicity.
Oh man.
We kept them happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I've talked about this one before, I guess, without really thinking of it this way, but the tooth fairy thing, you know, like you put your bones under your pillow so a fairy can carry them away. Like it's the most occult shit ever, but like it's something that has persisted, you know, like And it's like people who will straight up call every witch that they know a Satanist blindly and ignorantly will then go home and tell their kid to put their tooth under their pillow for the tooth fairy.
Yes.
Like,
or this whole what? Elf on the Shelf thing.
Yeah.
That is the most good one too. I have ever heard of in my life. A freaking elf coming in your house.
Uh-huh.
And there are people that are getting into it. My brother, okay? My brother is the most, like, Republican, you know, straightforward Christian on the planet, right? He's a cop. He's, like, you know, masculine man. He does Elf on the Shelf with his little girl. And I swear he has more fun with that every year than he does anything else. It is like he becomes a little kid again. And it is such a witchy thing to do. It drives me insane. I love it. I think it's hilarious. But that's just like, you're literally, that's the fae. Playing with the fae. Come on.
Have you seen the newer version, which is Snoop on the Stoop? Snoop Dogg the Elf? Oh my God, that's terrific.
I love it. That is Snoop terrific. On the Stoop is the best thing I absolutely thing I've ever love heard it. Of.
I'm going to flash a picture of Snoop on the Stoop for you right up here for a second. And I hope you enjoyed that. it's just one of the most ridiculous and fun things, I think. Like, I'm not a Christmas person. This is not my season. I'm a fall guy. Like, my year begins at the end of September and ends at the end of November. The rest of it's filler. but, like, I despise Christmas. However, Snoop on the Stoop might be the thing that brings me back in.
I'm telling you, it'll bring you back.
Might be.
Not, I'm like you though. I'm not like into Christmas, but I'm not into Christmas. Okay. I'm into Yule. I'm into winter solstice. Sure. I'm into the dark half of the year. I'm into all that. You know, like I will decorate. Don't get me wrong. Okay. This is one of four trees that I have. Don't judge, but I like the festivity of it.
Mm-hmm.
Max, like, he is so Christmas this year. Like, it is, I don't know why it's not like we've like forced it on him in any way. He is just so into it. He is into Santa Claus. He is into the Grinch. Like I'm trying to, He loves the Grinch. He has a little Grinch plushie that he carries around with him all the time. He loves it. he's all about it. So like, I want him, if he enjoys it, I'm going to, you know, put the trees out and we're going to decorate and we're going to make cookies and do the Elf on the Shelf thing. He really wants an elf. So we're just,
who doesn't?
Seriously, I will have so much fun with that. With my witchiness, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I will be the ultimate. I work with the fae a lot. I like the fae. Spirits of the land, the fae, they're my homies. We vibe. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Bringing a little Christmas spirit, actually. So I need to look because when this episode comes out, it will be 4 days after Christmas. So as a late Christmas present, there you go.
Merry happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Paranormal Patty.
That one vine right there along with Snoop on the Stoop. That's what keeps me in the spirit. but you know, people like us, we recognize and have the knowledge of what traditions were stolen from different practices a long time ago to create what are Christmas rituals now.
Yes, very much so.
You know, so I understand your perspective, you know, like you recognize the stuff. I recognize it as well. It just doesn't bring me the joy that it brings to most Americans. I just don't know what it is about it. The older I get, the more grouchy and Grinch-like I am.
Hey,
but that's
okay. Embrace it. Everybody got to have a Grinch. Okay.
So I live in this little tiny village. You know, there's in the voting district, there's 104 is our population.
Okay? Wow.
At Halloween, my house is the only house with Halloween decorations. And Christmas time, I'm the only house without Christmas decorations.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so don't judge, but, and you won't, because you'll appreciate this. So I decorated the inside of the house for Christmas. I didn't do anything to the outside. I still have pumpkins. I still have a ghost. I still have my witch rock out on. There. Like rock we rocking it all right? I am right there with you. I am a 100% Halloween girl. I love Samhain is my time. Okay. That is, I love entering fall. Fall is like once. And the problem is here, like fall doesn't usually hit until freaking late October, sometimes November. Like we're still hot until Halloween. This year we actually were pretty cold on Halloween, but most of the time it's still hot. So it's hard for me to embrace that when everyone else starts embracing it. I'm like, I'm wearing sandals and shorts. Okay. It is not fall. When the leaves start falling off the trees, it will be fall.
Yes.
And then it will be cold. I almost
feel it doesn't last long. I almost feel like we need to reevaluate the seasons because of the way the climate has changed. Like we need to kind of adjust a little bit and push fall and winter a little further out.
And I think, yes, I totally agree. And then a part of me is like, I don't want to, you know, because like it all makes sense how it all falls, especially with the witchy calendar. I mean, I practice the Sabbats. We do Yule, we do Samhain, we do all of it.
You got to move them. We got to move them.
If we move them, like, it's just going to throw everything off and I'm going to have to like reevaluate. That's a lot.
I know.
But
no one likes change. Okay.
I mean, it's
it doesn't feel like fall when fall is official. It doesn't feel like winter when winter is official. It doesn't feel like spring. And then it's summer for like 11 months.
Seriously. Like,
especially in Texas.
Oh my God. It's like, okay, I will admit, you know, the only place I haven't lived in Texas is on the east side. I've lived in central Texas. I've lived in north Texas. I grew up in north Texas. Now I live in west Texas. And I will say west Texas actually has seasons. Like we actually, I mean, yes, it can, you know, we'll still have our occasional like hot 90 degree day in October, but we actually have a relatively okay seasonal like schedule. North Texas, no, it's like there were times Lubbock is the desert, right? Like I associate Lubbock with the desert, and there were times that my mom was hotter in North Texas than we were here this summer, and I was like, that doesn't seem right. Like
that's weird.
That does not seem logical.
Yeah. I've been to Texas one time. It was in March. I went to Dallas in like March of, '09 or so. And I remember it was like 20 degrees here in Illinois. When, like I got to Dallas and it was 55, 60. Mm-hmm. And I was like, at the time I was like, yeah, this is better. But in the summertime, I would just get there and melt.
Oh my God. It's awful. If you're not used to it, like, and when I was,
it will literally kill you.
It will literally kill you if you're not careful. I used to work outside. I worked at Lowe's for 6-7 years in the outside garden department. And let me tell you, summers were dangerous. They were bad.
Sure.
They were, and I worked in, so I lived in DFW at one point and it was worse there than it was when I lived in North Texas, because you have all the smog and you have all the humidity. It's way more humid there because of all of the pavement. So it was the worst experience of my life. I'm not going to lie. I hated every minute of it. And I loved my job. I enjoyed it. I worked with plants. I was vibing. But
That's your thing.
It was bad. It was horrible.
Yeah. So one more question, because I know that you're probably itching to unload. I'm going to give you a little second to unload on the current state of witchcraft in social media. You've already kind of popped a couple of times talking about witch talkers, and I really want to get your perspective on this. Like, what do you think about these people? And do you think that they are helping the cause in furthering people's understanding of magic and witchcraft?
Okay. Here it is. And to all you witch talkers out there, I am not dogging witch. I'm not dogging TikTok. All right. It has a place. It has entertainment. There are some funny stuff on there. There's some wild stuff on there. It's fine. That's social media now. Like, okay. But my issue is witch talk has become a cesspool of negativity, misinformation, and I have issues with that. There are some really great TikTokers out there. Okay, y'all, like, there are some really great people to follow. I could give you a list of people to follow that align with witchcraft, how it's supposed to be, in my opinion. Okay, this is just my opinion. But there is so much out there that is garbage. It's absolute garbage. It also makes you think that you have to practice a certain way. It makes you conform to a certain set of rules or a certain spiritual path or whatever, and you can get lost in that. And those people eat that up. They love it. It gives them more views. It gives them more money if they're on that round of it. It is not good for your soul. So just be aware that is there. And there are people out there that have a lot less followers that are real people that you can actually connect with and that you can actually understand witchcraft instead of, like, that they will help you because they want to. They're the wise women, in my opinion, of the social media platform. I think that it's good, I guess, that is it, though, that we're getting all of our witchcraft out there. I mean, maybe it is, but I don't know. I think that some people are using witchcraft as a way to voice opinions that shouldn't be associated with witchcraft, too. So,
yeah,
I'm cool with it. I'm here for it. But just make sure that you are, like, doing your due diligence. Don't just believe something that somebody posts on TikTok. Or if you're an aesthetic person, great. That's awesome. More power to you. Personally, I'm not. I, as you can tell, it's just a jumbled mess back here. And that's okay. Because that's how I like it. I mean, there are occasions where I will set up, you know, stuff for my website or anything like that. But, like, I'm not here to create an aesthetic, because I think aesthetics waste time. I think that it dilutes your message. It dilutes everything that you're trying to get across to somebody. So just feel like that. I feel like people think that that's how it has to be as a witch, and it's not, like, by any means. Don't get me wrong, shout out Dana Newkirk, her freaking aesthetic is beautiful and I would love to have it, but I just don't have time. Like, I love it and I'm here for it, but I just don't have it.
Yeah.
I wish I did. At the same time, I don't, you know, like, it's more real to me when it's just bones on the shelf and candles. Like,
yeah, it feels more genuine from the outside looking in, you know.
Right.
So
it just feels,
I respect it,
disingenuous to try to create something that is not me. And I just want that to be known. You do not have to adhere or conform to anything. Your practice is your practice, and you need to make it yours. Don't think that it has to be like your number one witch on Instagram or TikTok, because it's unrealistic. Yep. You're just going to disappoint yourself, and you're going to get lost in it. I did. I'm not going to lie. I got lost in it for a little while. It's easy. Like, especially when you're first starting it, that's when I kind of got lost in it. And it was like, oh, this feels so wrong. Like, it just doesn't feel right. And if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Like, just don't do it. You're going to know what feels right to you, and you're going to know what your practice looks like to you. And that's what's important. So be aware.
That's a great message.
Watch out for TikTok.
Totally agree. Or don't watch TikTok. That's what the book that I'm in. Don't do it. Don't do it.
It's not worth your time.
Okay. So this was worth everyone's time. Thank you so much for joining us here in the Paranormal Patio for this special interview, The Wild Creek Witch. Logan Canifax, everybody, round of applause.
Thank you. I know you're clapping at home.
take as much time as you need, promote your website and anything else that you'd like to promote for everyone to come and check out. And I will definitely include a link in the show notes. So
cool. So you can follow me on Instagram. You can follow me on TikTok if you want. I very rarely post on there. My website is thewildcreekwitch.com. And if you're interested in teas, I make some really great teas. And I do some tinctures too, mostly like fire cider. I'll have elderberry syrup in the new year. That's about it. Instagram and my website. And that's pretty much where I'm at all the time. So,
I mean, that's an unfortunate necessity to stay relevant in today's society. Okay. You have to be on social media.
Oh, goodness. It's true.
All right. It is true. Thank you so much for coming on. I really had a great time, and hang on the line here and we'll chat a little bit before I cut you loose, but I'm going to end the recording of our wonderful interview. Make sure you go check out The Wild Creek Witch, everybody, and you'll have a great time and you'll learn some stuff. All right.
Thank you.
All right. We're back. Welcome back to Paranormal Patio. You know, the whole shindig, even though this is the same episode, you haven't left, but we did. But that's okay.
Took a real break real quick.
So, we're back with hysteria, accusations, executions. I think we made a pretty clear point. I think Elizabeth Betsy Reed was probably not only innocent of being a witch, but also probably innocent of killing her husband.
And when you're accused of crimes like that, your mental state is not going to be...
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be a normal human being. You're going to ride out on your coffin and singing songs.
No, I mean, I hope she did it just to piss in their Wheaties. I hope so,
too, because that's cool.
That'd be awesome. I would love to do that. You know, like, not to glorify or like, make a hero of a terrible person, but I've always loved John Wayne Gacy's last words before they executed him. Kiss my ass. Like, that's the way I'd want to go. You know what I mean?
Like, the killer clown.
Dude. And that's, you know, not local.
No.
But...
Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
The movie's great. I laughed. The first time I ever saw it, I think it was one of those movies I watched late at night. They played it on Stars. And he has that joint, and he shotguns that guy outside the car. And I'm just like, dude, God, they put
that
this
movie
in
was great.
It was a good movie.
The bully from Pee Wee Herman played Gacy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He was also in Leprechaun.
Oh, Francis.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I never remember that guy's real name.
I can't either.
There's Chubb in Teen Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And Teen Wolf 2.
And Teen Wolf 2.
Yeah. Jason Bateman couldn't even save that turd.
Yeah, oh man.
Teen Wolf 2 was terrible.
What was Teen Wolf 1 or 2 that had the part at the end with the guy standing up and his dong?
That was 1.
Was it?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was because the big basketball game, right? And they win. Michael J. Fox decides to go in Alex P. Keaton mode instead of, you know, Teen Wolf mode. and they win, and there's a big celebration, and the crowd like rushes out of the bleachers and onto the floor, and that dude's got his fly unzipped.
He wants to get done, he buttons up his face.
Yeah, dude, that's wild.
And it's on the VHS.
If you have it's the old on streaming still that way.
They still have that. Yes, they didn't cut it out
because it's right in the credits.
Not like even
the,
a blur.
The credits are literally on the screen right there.
I remember first time I ever noticed that.
Yeah, me too.
My buddies were sitting around. We were like 17 or 18 watching it on Stars.
I had to be about the same age. Yep.
And we were, one of my buddies was like, oh, hold up. That's right when you could start rewinding stuff. Yeah. He's like, no way, I never. And we stopped it. We're like, ah, start laughing. You know, we're like, yeah, he's got his dong hanging out.
It was awesome. Props to that guy. Hey, if you're that guy, give us a call at our hotline, 765-665-6488.
We'd like to hear the true story.
We would love to know what really happened in the set of Teen Wolf 1. I know that you're a closeted Paranormal Patio fan. But your public exhibitionism did not go unnoticed, and we thank you. So, we're going to carry on here. This is a story from Pennsylvania, Keith, and I had never heard of this before. I came across it, and I thought it was really interesting, especially to partner it up with Elizabeth Betsy Reed, just because there's this inherent human nature of people that believe that people that might be doing better than them are probably evil.
You know, like the whole witchcraft thing back then when society was changing into the new world.
Yeah, sure. But this is 1684.
So it's even farther.
This is
back.
Way back.
I don't think I've heard this one besides us talking about it beforehand.
Yeah. Totally new to me. All right. I will try my best to not butcher everybody's names in this one like I did with the Rasputin story, but this is something that's really interesting. Really interesting might be a stretch, but it's definitely interesting. This is the Witch of Ridley Creek. In 1684, Margaret Matson and her husband arrived in this new world before Pennsylvania namesake William Penn, before the land was ever granted to him by England's King Charles II. They were Swedish and, along with their neighbors, made up the first group of immigrants to settle along the lower Delaware River. Not long after, though, they would be forced out by English settlers, as was the situation more often than not.
Yep.
Margaret was a traditional Finnish healer and for 30 years had caused absolutely no problems in society, right? Margaret and her husband were very successful farmers, though. Having arrived early, they were able to claim much of the good river bottom land for themselves. Later settlers from the Netherlands and England found that they had to look a little bit harder, go a little bit farther inland, just to find suitable farmland.
And what year is this?
1684.
Ooh.
Old timey.
That's way back.
Yeah.
That's New France, New France.
Yeah. There was not just a little bit of jealousy regarding these Swedish farmers. There was a ton. As mentioned earlier, not long after they arrived, they get all set up on Ridley Creek, which is a tributary to the Delaware River. They have the best, like they're set. Like the rest of their lives are going to be terrific.
On the Delaware.
Yep. On the Delaware River. And so, as often happens in the case of jealousy, false rumors would be started and believed by other people as they spread. If an Englishman's cow failed to give milk, it must be because it's been hexed. If the Englishman's crops did not do well, there had to be a reason. It must be that old Swedish woman. She must be a witch, and she's just casting spells on everybody.
Crops are dying. Wells are drying up.
Well, that's how the rumor spread anyway. Eventually, one of the English farmers went so far as to file a complaint with the authorities charging that Margaret Matson was indeed a witch. A date was set for trial. A jury of 21 Englishmen was selected. The proprietor himself, William Penn, would preside over the trial as judge. Of course, in those days, the defendant was not provided with legal counsel, and poor Margaret Matson couldn't even speak English anyway.
Pretty sure old William Penn was a prominent judge at that point.
Absolutely, he was. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Now, the colony hadn't yet established an actual court system. Matson was first brought before the council on February 7th, 1683, to have her trial set. On February 27th, 1683, a grand jury, a petit jury, witnesses, the attorney general, and even then Governor William Penn himself filled the courtroom in Philadelphia. So they had to move it a little bit, right? They're out in the sticks. Matson, who required an interpreter, pleaded not guilty. Witnesses accused Matson of a laundry list of transgressions. One man, Henry Dryer Street, who was also a member of the jury, this seems really fair, said that he had heard through the grapevine 20 years prior that Matson was a witch. Another man.
Through the grapevine, huh?
Yeah, through the grapevine. Another man, Charles Ashcombe, said Matson's own daughter had told him she was a witch. Finally, a woman named Aniki Coolin told the jury Matson had boiled a calf's heart after removing it through witchcraft. Yeah. Removed it through witchcraft. Wrap your brain around that one. Charles Ashcombe attested, said that Anthony's wife, this is a direct quote and the English is old, said that Anthony's wife, being asked why she sold her cattle, was because her mother had bewitched them, having taken the witchcraft of Hendrick's cattle and put on her oxen. She might keep but no other cattle, and also that one night the daughter of the prisoner called him up hastily, and when he came, she said there was a great light, but just before, an old woman with a knife in her hand at the bed's feet, and therefore she cried out and desired Jeannot Simcock to take away his calves, or else she would send them to hell. Man, people were weird.
I wonder who the witchcraft is. He's going to send them in hell through witchcraft?
That's interesting, right? Well, you know, the term witch at the time wasn't... It was like the witches of the Bible, like the anti-religion. Not so much a witchcraft as a pagan tradition or, you know, the Appalachian tradition, the old country folk tradition, like... This was, if you're a witch, you worked for the devil. That's how it was laid.
You're a devil worshipper.
Get accused of being a witch now is totally different.
Yeah.
Anyway. The prosecution tried to ask Margaret many questions. Finally, the gist of the matter came down to two questions asked of Margaret by none other than William Penn himself. Art thou a witch? Doth you fly through the air on a broomstick? Margaret, of course, not understanding the questions at all, seemed to answer in the affirmative. The prosecuting attorney and the English farmers who coveted Matson's lands were delighted. It seemed Margaret had confessed to the crimes. But William Penn had sensed that the whole thing was a sham, that the charges were trumped up just to deprive these old established settlers of their property. As the chief judge, he deliberated. Then he announced to the court that there was nothing in the law of the province that made it a crime to fly about on a broomstick. Not guilty, Penn decreed. Let the woman go. That last part's actually an urban legend, likely seeing Penn himself as a focus of the rumor mill for being more than a bit socially progressive. He wasn't a bad guy.
Yeah, but the whole flying on the broomstick.
Yeah. Her punishment was light, though. The Matsons were instructed to pay a fine of £50 apiece, and Margaret had to practice good behavior for 6 months. This was a popular Quaker practice at the time, with the money serving as a sort of bail. So, as long as the accused behaved themselves and they kept peace, no further charges were made against them, the money would be returned in 6 months. That was kind of how it was, right? It is most interesting to note that in 1684, there was no law against witchcraft in Pennsylvania, and that William Penn had abolished the death penalty in his colony for all but willful murder. Laws against witchcraft were not imposed until 1718, when they were forced upon the colony by England's Privy Council. So it's interesting to speculate what actions would or could have been taken against Margaret had the jury pronounced her guilty of actually practicing witchcraft. Why did the trial ever commence in the first place if no law was broken? In spite of this, the verdict returned may well have averted a sudden rush of similar jealousy-based charges against other equally innocent women, as happened in Salem, Massachusetts, where one conviction led to another, led to another, led to another.
They float, they're a witch, right? Or was it they sank? One
to two. If they float, they're a witch. If they sink, they die anyway. Like, yep.
We'll never know.
If it would have turned into that before the Salem stuff, I mean, that would have been like, what would we have been looking at now? You know, it's weird enough to look back at the Salem witch trials and think, you know, how insane people were, but to look at Pennsylvania in the 1600s would be even crazier.
Yeah. Because it's the 1600s. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
What, the 13 colonies then?
You know, history better than I do.
French explorers going through Illinois country at the time, down the Mississippi.
Yeah, absolutely.
Made the churches at Chicago and St. Louis first. Yeah.
So, unlike the colony of Pennsylvania, which was established as a safe place for Quakers, the scene in colonial Massachusetts was much different. The villagers in Salem were in constant conflict with the Puritan minister. So, it would have been a totally different thing. Margaret and her husband lived out the rest of their lives relatively quietly, but the legend of the Witch of Ridley Creek lives on. There is a postscript to this account of Pennsylvania witchcraft. On June 24, 1736, over half a century after Matson stood to be proved a witch, the prosecution for the crime of witchcraft was outlawed in England, However, the crime of pretending to exercise or use any kind of witchcraft, sorcery, enchantment, or to undertake to tell fortunes or pretend from his skill or knowledge any occult crafty science remained. This law still stands in the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Crimes Code, Section 7104, still renders it a misdemeanor of the third degree if someone pretends for gain or lucre to tell fortunes or predict future events by cards, tokens, the inspection of the head or hands, or by consulting with the movements of the heavenly bodies, or pretends to effect any purpose by spells, charms, necromancy, or incantation, or advises the taking of administering what are commonly called love powders or potions, or pretends to enable anyone to get or to recover stolen property, or to give good luck or to put bad luck on a person or animal.
No tarot cards, no palm readings, no scrying stones,
dude,
no crystal balls, and no Viagra.
You can do it for your own personal enjoyment, I suppose, according to the law. But man, there is still this negative connotation on witchcraft today.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here.
I see a lot, because I know a few of my friends that are, they're the Wiccan, and they do all that stuff. Sure.
I know a lot of people. Yeah. I've met a lot of great people that are practicing magicians.
Yeah.
You know, people I consider friends.
I know. I usually tell them spells printed out books don't work on me.
No, it's true. They don't work on anyone. But no, like, we're making light of a situation where, you know, people, luckily this Mattson lady didn't get murdered for being a witch, you know what I mean? But like, they dealt with, I'm guessing, a lot of like bad tithings from their neighbors for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They tried to get one over on them
still.
Yeah.
Yep, throwing rocks at him and shit. You know how people were then.
Maybe even sabotaging their farm.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I never found any evidence of that in this story, but.
Yeah, that would have happened. Yeah, and then probably not reported on because they didn't want any more trouble after it.
Sure.
Gotten enough trouble as it was in Pennsylvania.
So, if you live in Pennsylvania around the Delaware River, give us a call at our hotline. Tell us if you've heard this story before, because I had not. 765-665-6488. Send us a text, too.
It seems like most of the witchcraft stories, too, in the trials were, like, at Quaker places. You know, it was mostly a Quaker thing.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought that I come from Quakers, too. I was told that, no, I come from Nantucket and Acadians from there after War 1812 to the French people of Vincennes. And
yeah.
I was like, well, that's good, I guess.
At least you're not a Quaker.
I know. I have a beard, not the mustache. You know what I mean? Big old beard.
Yeah. Man, I keep thinking about it, though, like how weird it would be if we had the Pennsylvania witch trials instead of the Salem witch trials, like the Delaware River witch trials. I'm thinking about teaching about that in history classes.
That's how George got across. He called upon the spirits.
I know. That's it.
Crazy man.
That's it.
Wooden teeth.
You know, I don't remember where. I just came across that wooden teeth thing.
It's not.
Yeah, it's not true. No. Slave teeth, animal bone, and like
coyote teeth or something. Yeah. Slave teeth, but still.
That's weird, man. It's even worse. People were terrible.
But yeah. Hopefully, people were already dead before they got the teeth.
I doubt it.
No.
I doubt it.
That's got a good root on that one. I want
to. How could you tell that by looking at a good tooth that it has a good root? Or did you mean the slave had a good root?
No, I mean the tooth. Not the. But dude. They did have breeding camps, too.
Oh, I know. It was awful. And we talked, like, when we were talking about Big Jim. Like,
that's the Crenshaw House, I was reading too. It, and it made me think that's the breeding camp stories, too.
Like, so we'll double back and consider this a part two to Big Jim, but not really, just the area. The Crenshaw House, that Crenshaw dude was a reverse underground railroad stop. They're coming up, the slaves are coming up freed through Southern Illinois.
In Indiana.
He's welcoming them in, right?
Yep.
And saying, you can stay here for the night. Then, from the first ever underground parking garage.
Yes.
In his house, loads them into a carriage in the middle of the night where no one will know, and drives them back and sells them back.
Back, yeah.
Into slavery.
Yep.
Insane. Terrible. But he also bred them, had cages in the upstairs of the house. Have you been to the house?
I've never been to it, but I've drove by it many times.
I've been to it like three or four times at least. And I always wondered why, like, okay, it's like, it's a good thing to keep in history. So you, like, you'll always be doomed to repeat the mistakes.
Why is that place still standing?
Well, it's barely standing now.
Yeah, it's barely standing now. Yes.
But like, it was like a tourist spot. Like, come and see how terrible people were treated. Like, I don't get that, but I'm glad that I at least got to see it. You know what I mean?
Before it's gone, yes.
Yeah, because as a kid, I didn't appreciate it. But as an adult now, I appreciate seeing it more. And it just further fuels the fire for your hatred of terrible people.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. And as you know how much we've really progressed as American society. We're trying.
But we are trying.
There's some of us that don't want us to get ahead, don't want us to be together.
Yeah. That's terrible. You know, as long as we're all distracted and fight with one another, the people in charge can do whatever.
We won't get the hint of what's really going on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Every time. Anyway, this has been accusations and hysteria, or hysteria and accusations and executions. Luckily, only one execution. So it wasn't just like a cash grab title, but it fit. And don't accuse people of being witches, because it's not something that anyone needs to be accused of, for one thing. And for another, if it's something that's looked down upon, don't just do it out of jealousy like Elizabeth Reed. Don't do it out of jealousy like Margaret Mattson, for innocent people, most likely innocent people.
Most likely, yes.
Well, Mattson, of course.
Yeah, yeah, she, of course.
The accusations are insane, and she removed a calf's heart with witchcraft.
I don't understand that.
She just waved her wand and, like, the heart came out of the cow and just fell over dead.
Or she drawled it out with her powers and then cooked it.
Who wasn't boiling calf hearts?
They were all eating that stuff.
Right. Come on. Anyway.
Who eats the turkey heart on Thanksgiving?
Not this guy.
I have a couple times just to do it, just so people be like, oh, you won't do it.
I can't do internal organs, man. I can't. I can't get over that mental...
I like livers as long as they're fried, like crispy.
Just chicken?
Yes. No beef liver.
No beef liver?
No beef liver for me, but chicken liver, and it's got to be fried crispy.
I can't get over it. If I didn't know and I ate it, I might be okay. But if knowingly, I can't do it.
The first time when I was a kid that I ever had it, I thought it was octopus legs. I was like, octopus? My brother tells a story about it.
It's just octopus. I hope I remember that for the next episode. I really hope I remember that, because I'm going to pull that out at an opportune time. Thanks again for tuning in with us on Paranormal Patio. We've got lots more in store for the season. Lots of great stories, both local to us and maybe possibly local to you. Hit us up. Follow us on socials. Watch us on YouTube or listen to us on Spotify, and hit the hotline. The number was on the screen earlier, and it was audible in the podcast that you're listening to while you're driving to work. Wait till you get to work to call. Don't call while you're driving. Don't text while you're driving, people. But we're looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, we've got some great stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to touch on a lot of things. Like, most people don't know around here. They know the Betsy Reed.
Everybody knows that.
It's the local story. Everybody knows that. But there's a few in that we're getting on that they don't know.
Sure.
Like the stuff from Vincent's. All that. A lot of that stuff was lost. Yeah. Whenever New France was taken over, all that records was shipped to New Orleans. So all the records. And then it flooded. So they lost all the records from Vincent's. Yeah. Most of them. I have a great-great-grandma. They just found her death certificate. And I seen it on the internet the other day. And was, you know how the curators do stuff like that. And I was checking on it. They found it, and it was in a Catholic church in French, her death certificate in Carbondale. And somebody found it in some records. And they put a picture of it online. It's all in French.
Wild.
Yeah. Huh. Buried in the... I'm pretty sure she's buried in the French cemetery.
Hmm.
And I know her family is. That the cemetery is named after her family and over there.
Is she a witch?
No. They're French people. Come from the... What would have been LaSalle's expedition? Were the first ones that stayed?
Are there no witches in France?
I'm not sure. But then the whole werewolf dogman theory comes from France originally. What was it? The French Alps were the first stories of it.
Yep.
And that's my theory where Dogman came from. They brought him over.
Hmm.
Like on a ship or something. accident, like kind of like a Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Just like a stowaway.
Stows away. A stowaway.
I don't know. We'll talk about that. We will talk about that in a future episode. It's on the docket. So, in the meantime, if you find anything weird, hear anything weird, share it with us, please.
Yeah, hit us up on the hotline.
Wabash Valley exclusively? No. Anywhere. No,
anywhere. We want to hear your stories.
Anywhere. Absolutely. And you can be totally, totally anonymous. And if you want to be one of those guys or gals that wants to send a ridiculous made-up story in,
yeah,
if I think it's ridiculous and made-up, I'm going to read it anyway.
Yeah.
And we will
we'll laugh our heads off on it.
We'll enjoy it the same.
Yep.
So just send us something, but preferably the truth or what you believe to be, because we don't need to be making hysteria accusations and executions.
Nope.
Perfect ending.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can also visit www.paranormalpatio.com for links to this and other episodes, as well as become a Patreon member. For just $3 a month, you'll get access to this and future episodes in video format and get them before anyone else. For your hosts, Jason and Keith, I'm CJ Wheelwright. Thanks for pulling up a chair. The Season 5 theme song is provided by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. We'll be right back.